Let's Chat with Grace. So we are continuing with Brian Porter today. Brian, when I first met him, he lived in New Jersey.
Connecticut,
that's right. And now he lives in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. On the Cape Cod area, which is fabulous. But so we talked a little bit about Brian's development into the Southeast, he going into Miami to get his feet wet in multifamily. And so now we're going to talk about, it has been so fun to work with Brian in the multifamily here in Chattanooga, because he took two properties. We're going to talk about the one in Brainerd first. That was your mm-hmm. first one, mm-hmm. Which is now called The Oaks. Mm-hmm. And we worked on the logo. We worked on the whole concept. Brian totally re-engineered it. But that was an interesting story, because when Brian, we studied that for 6 months, eight mm-hmm. months. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that. It was a fun project.
So I came to Chattanooga in December of 2010 with the idea of acquiring a few more single-family homes. Mm-hmm. I think we had six in Chattanooga at the time. Mm-hmm. And they were all doing well. They were renting. They were cash flowing. It was good. And Grace said, I want to show you a multifamily opportunity. And I said, sure. And so... and I had just at that point done a couple deals in Miami, so I was starting to get comfortable with that. And you showed me an abandoned apartment property. And half the windows were broken out. And I think one or two of the apartments had some residents that were paying the
hanging in there.
It was bank owned.
Right.
They were paying a property manager, and then there were people that were squatting too in mm-hmm. some of the units. And you know, you could see it being a very nice property.
That was,
even though it was a mess, even though it was wrecked, even though it was it was probably a crack den, I don't know, but
probably at that point.
Probably.
Because when I went and looked at it before you came, I was scoping it out, and I called the realtor, and they go, oh, you don't want to go over there by yourself. I'm like, what do you mean? Yeah. I used to live in Houston.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not worried, but...
It was a little scary.
But it wasn't that bad. But
you wouldn't want to go there at night, for sure. It was not lit up.
No.
It was dark at
right.
night.
But it was such... I felt it had so much potential.
Absolutely.
So...
Me too.
We took 6 months to negotiate it with the bank.
Yeah. A little bit of good fortune. We were negotiating with the bank back and forth. The bank, by the way, was in Dallas. They were not local. They really didn't know what they were
doing.
They had no idea. And as we were negotiating, my offers were going, the price was going down, 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 because...
Right. It got worse and worse and
because
worse.
Because you began to realize that it was really going to be... a complete rebuild.
Like
nothing was working well
right.
on the property. It was, the buildings were built in the 50s mm-hmm. and, you know, and pretty much everything needed to be updated. But I said, we got lucky. During that negotiation, the property manager let the buildings go vacant, completely vacant. Mm-hmm. And in Chattanooga, if a property is vacant for more than 3 months, you have to bring it up to current building code.
Right.
Which means, you know, fire suppression sprinkler systems mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of things. And when I learned that, I took that bit of information to the bank and I said, you know, I'll show you my numbers. This is this is the best offer I can make you, and I'm going to show you why. Mm-hmm. But I'm also going to show you that nobody else is going to be able to do much better, because this property needs so much work.
Right.
And I ended up prevailing in the bank. Yeah.
It was a great deal. A lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But it was a great deal. It was pennies on the money based on what the value is today.
Oh yeah.
But so it was really exciting to watch you do that whole project. You spent, I don't know, a year?
We closed in November of 11. No, we closed in July of 11. We started construction in November of 11, and we finished about 15 months later.
Yeah, okay.
We worked on one building at a time.
Yeah.
My cash flow was tight, mm-hmm. so, you know, I couldn't just afford to bring in big crews and have them do it all quickly. I was working with smaller crews. We were doing one building at a time, and we'd try to finish a building and get, you know, start renting it, and then we would be halfway through the second building, and then that kind of thing.
Right.
And
I think one of the coolest things you did with that property was, one, you put a very nice barrier around it.
Yes.
And then you gated it.
Well, shortly after I bought it, I was walking the property and I ran into a police officer who did security detail at night off hours for mm-hmm. the bank that previously owned it. I may have met him while we were negotiating. It was early, really early. And I was just talking to him about the situation. What do you find here? And he says, well, you know, this is a cut through for the kids in the neighborhood. And he pointed out the trails where the kids would walk through the property. And he said, and that's where a lot of the trouble comes, because the kids are walking and they just pick up a rock and whatever. So he said, if I were you, I would put a fence, you know, right at the precipice of the hill, so mm-hmm. that from the other side, the fence would look like it was 10 feet high. Because the way the property, it was kind of sloped on three sides. And as soon as he said that, I thought, oh my God, that makes so much sense. You don't need to put the fence like down by the street. You put the fence, mm-hmm. you know, at the top of the hill. And so we walked the property. I put the fence exactly where he said, and he was 100% right. And then early on in the process, we had a construction gate, and then we built a nice mechanical gate. Mm-hmm.
A beautiful gate.
Yeah. No, it looks
artistic. You know, you really combined function and art to some degree to make it nice, to stand out in the area.
Yeah. No, it makes a statement, not grandiose, just nice.
Yeah.
You know, kind of arts and crafts, but nice.
And it also created a new demographic.
Absolutely.
You know, nurses would now consider the area because it was secure and they felt comfortable and they were very close to a hospital.
The entire time we were working on that property, in my mind, my tenant was a 24-year-old nurse mm-hmm. working at Erlanger or Park, you know, Park Ridge or whatever, who's coming home from work at 2 in the morning and needs to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Because I thought, if I can make her comfortable, mm-hmm. I can make anybody comfortable.
Right.
And so everything we did, the lighting, the security, the cameras, the lock setup, all of it was geared towards making that imaginary, you know, young female tenant comfortable.
And I think you did an incredible job with that. And that's something that I think more and more investors should really think about up front when they're investing is, who's your demographic? Mm. What are you trying to achieve? And how do you do that? And you did such a brilliant job there. The other property, I think you did a great job, which was in Fort Wood, the edge of Fort Wood.
Yep.
And kind of a similar thing. It was distressed to some degree, but it was
for sure
something. It wasn't a bank property. It was a kind of an estate sale situation, I believe.
I think it was a flipper. It was a couple of guys, I believe, or maybe one guy that had bought a couple years earlier.
Uh-huh.
We bought that property in
17. They bought it from the estate.
They bought it. They bought it very cheaply in like 2010. When the market was way down.
Yeah.
And they were selling for a nice profit. They were doing mm-hmm. fine. But you know, it's two buildings with a courtyard in the middle, and there were sneakers hanging from the wires in the courtyard, and we all know what that means. And it had a very bad reputation. And two of the apartments were not habitable,
right?
Because the sewer system in them was broken. So that was a complete rebuild too. We kind of figured that on early on, but it's two blocks from UTC
and Erlanger.
And Erlanger,
walking to Erlanger.
Yeah. So we thought, okay, you know, the renting is going to be easy if we make them nice.
Mm-hmm.
We had to reconfigure the floor plans just a little to squeeze a washer dryer in. Mm-hmm. And a different kitchen configuration. But the floor plans are nice.
It turned out really well.
It turned out great.
Yeah. And on both of those projects, you worked with a designer.
Yeah.
And I think that made a big difference.
That was your suggestion on the Oaks.
Yeah.
And you introduced me to Tony.
Right.
And who is a local designer, decorator, very good at what he does.
Really good at what he does.
Color, materials, mm-hmm. Flooring. He's just super good. And you made extensive use of him on both projects. And it made all the difference.
It did. It really didn't cost that much compared to what the end result was. With, I think they are a higher value visually.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Demographically, you were able to accomplish what you were trying to accomplish.
Right.
And so, okay, so shoulda, coulda, woulda. You've been investing for over 25 years?
Around 20.
20.
Yeah.
What was your biggest shoulda, coulda, woulda that you didn't do?
I don't know. I would say at this point, I wish I had done a little more in Miami, although I was pretty stretched.
Mm-hmm.
We were taking a lot of risk at that point, but we just felt so confident. I wish I'd done a little more in Miami if I could have. I don't have any regrets in Chattanooga. Everything we've done worked out the way we thought it would.
Yeah, you've done really well in Chattanooga.
You know, I wish I hadn't gone so deep in Columbus. But that's we made decisions at the time.
Right, and that's it would be great to have a crystal ball.
Yeah,
and you look at what's environmentally going on and what people say is going to happen, and sometimes it doesn't happen.
Well, it's the
or a consequence of a.
There were events that were known. We didn't anticipate the wars and the fact that of course all the troops are going to get sent overseas. They're not going to be hanging out at Fort Benning, and we didn't know that. And so that's okay. I don't have really that many regrets. I mean, I've enjoyed my career. It's given me a lot of freedom. It gave me freedom to raise my children. Participate very mm-hmm. actively in their lives. They're now both in their mid-20s, but we just, that was awesome. I've been able to do a lot of volunteer stuff with different organizations that have meant a lot in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, and I've had a lot of fun. I love what I do.
Well, you're very good at it.
Oh, you're kind. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and so words of wisdom for investors that are just getting into real estate right now, here we are kind of at, I don't know if we're at where we were in 2008 or 2009, but what would you give new investors in real estate right now? Words of wisdom.
Well, especially early in my career, reaching out and talking to other investors can be really, really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
I read a bunch of books. Those are good for giving you a foundation.
Right.
It helped me build like a financial model that I would use to analyze properties that I picked up right out of a book.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful. But most of my learning has come from other investors. And I found real estate investors to be, in general, a very generous group.
Mm-hmm.
They are more than happy to talk about their experience, what they've done, what they, what didn't work for them. I used to talk to people on the phone all the time. And when I was a mentor with that investor group, I would get calls and I would give people as much time as they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That was, it was kind of a you give and you receive kind of thing,
Right. Yeah.
And I would encourage people to talk to as many investors as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, would you have started out in multifamily earlier if you knew then what you know now, or would you have went down the single family path like you did as well.
No, I would definitely have done multifamily. But, I mean, having said that, so I did home improvements going to put myself through college.
Mm-hmm.
I have a degree in accounting and was a CPA. And then I worked in construction finance for 10 years, analyzing building cost. So I had a, and also analyzing land acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
I got very, as involved as I could in, on the development side of building. So I had a really great learning opportunity where somebody else was paying me to learn,
yeah.
You know, and it was their dime if their mistakes were made, not mine. So I was fortunate that way. So, I mean, I'm not saying I would suggest that, you know, a 22-year-old person who's just out of school looking to be an investor jump into multifamily right away.
Mm-hmm.
The risks are significant.
Very much so.
But the multifamily investment arena, the commercial investment arena, is really based on the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
What's your net operating income? What's the cap rate in the market?
Right.
That's where the prices are going to be, plus or minus a little
mm-hmm.
bit. And so it's fairly predictable. And if your rents are going up, you're making money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember thinking, I don't know, a year or two ago, I remember thinking every time I raised rent $30, that was $100,000 of net value in my pocket. So, you know, if I might raise rent $100 across the board, that's, you know, that's $300,000 of equity right away. Boom.
Yeah.
And actually, it's better now because the cap rate's dropped in Chattanooga. So, you know, that's just a nice. I talk to investors that are people that say they do investing and they're doing, you know, the stock market or crypto or whatever. And I'm like, you guys aren't investing. You're gambling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like roulette. That's like craps. There's so much that you can't control. And multifamily, you can pretty much control so much of what you do,
mm-hmm.
so much, including the amount of risk that you take, how leveraged you are financing, all of that.
Right.
And you can really control it. And I used to say, you know, especially when we were in Miami, we weren't investing. We were like manufacturing money, because we knew when we would fix those apartments up, the rents would go from 800 to 1100 or 1200
mm-hmm.
And shortly thereafter, we'd be seasoned and and, you know, we knew what the appraisers, their formulas, and we knew what it would be worth. And the bank had already said, yeah, you know, we'll give you whatever it was at the time. I think it was when the market was really tough, it was only 70% loan to value, but we worked up to 75 or 80, I think,
yeah.
over time. And we knew exactly where we were going. It was,
yeah.
it was very predictable. It was great.
Well, it's been a great time to see you again. I'm glad you were in Chattanooga this week. I really wanted to interview you at the podcast, and it worked out perfectly. And Brian has been such a great client, and I've seen his kids be raised. You know, I've seen his real estate investments mature and become a real asset, not only for you but your whole family.
Oh yeah,
and that's pretty exciting to experience that. So thank you so much, Brian Porter. It was great to see you again, and I know that people will get a lot out of this. So thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.